"Self-inflicted wounds while resisting arrest," said Vimes.
"Yes, sir,"
said Angua.
"Not all of them," said Carrot.
"They tried to rob our bar and take a Angua hostage," said Vimes.
"Oh, I see what you mean, sir," said Carrot. "Self-inflicted." "Yes, of course."
It had gone quiet in the mended drum. This was because it is usually very hard to be both loud and unconscious. Sergeant Colan was impressed at his own cleverness. Throwing a punch could stop a fight, of course, but in this case it had a quarter of rum, gin, and 16 chopped lemons floating in it. Some people were still upright, however. They were the serious drinkers who drank as if there was no tomorrow and rather hoped this would be the case. Fred Colan had reached the convivial drunk stage. He turned to the man beside him.
"It's good here, isn't it?"
he managed.
"When am I going to tell my wife? That's what I want to know," moaned the man.
"Dunno, see, you've been working late," said Colan, "and suck a peppermint before you goes home. That usually works."
"Working late, huh? I've been given the sack, me. A craftsman, 15 years at Spadger and Williams, right? And then they go bust because of Carey undercutting them, and I get a job at Carey's, and bang, I'm out of a job there too. Surplus to requirements. Bloody golems, forcing real people out of a job. What they want to work for, they got no mouth to feed. But the damn thing goes at it so fast you can't see its bloody arms moving."
"Shame.
Smash him up, that's what I say. I mean, we had a golem at S&W's, but old Schlob just used to plod along, you know, not buzz away like a blue-arse fly. You want to watch it, mate. They'll have your job next."
"Stoneface wouldn't stand for it," said Colan, undulating gently.
"Any chance of a job with you lot, then?"
"Dunno," said Colan. The man seemed to have become two men. "What's it you do?"
"I'm a wick dipper and end teaser, mate," they said.
"I can see that's a useful trade."
"Here you go, Fred," said the barman, tapping him on the shoulder and putting a piece of paper in front of him. Colan watched with interest as figures danced back and forth. He tried to focus on the one at the bottom, but it was too big to take in.
"What's this, then?"
"His Imperial Lordship's bar bill," said the barman.
"Don't be daft. No one can drink that much. I'm not paying."
"I'm including breakages, mind you."
"Yeah, like what?"
The barman pulled a heavy hickory stick from its hiding place under the bar. "Arms, legs, suit yourself," he said.
"Oh, come on, Ron. You've known me for years."
"Yes, Fred, you've always been a good customer, so what I'll do is I'll let you shut your eyes first."
"But that's all the money I've got."
The barman grinned. "Lucky one for you, eh?" Cheery Little Bottom leaned against the corridor wall outside her privy and wheezed. It was something alchemists learned to do early in their career. As her tutors had said, there were two signs of a good alchemist, the athletic and the intellectual. A good alchemist of the first sort was someone who could leap over the bench and be on the far side of a safely thick wall in 3 seconds, and a good alchemist of the second sort was someone who knew exactly when to do this. The equipment didn't help. She scrounged what she could from the guild, but a real alchemical laboratory should be full of the kind of glassware that looked as if it were produced during the Guild of Glassblowers' all-comers hiccuping contest. A proper alchemist did not have to run tests, using as her beaker a mug with a picture of a teddy bear on it, which Corporal Nobbs was probably going to be very upset about when he found it missing. When she judged that the fumes had cleared, she ventured back into her tiny room. That was another thing. Her books on alchemy were marvellous objects, every page a work of the engraver's art, but they nowhere contained instructions like, "Be sure to open a window." They did have instructions like, "Add aqua quiemis to the zinc until rising gas use vigorously evolved," but never added, "Don't do this at home," or even, "And say fare thee well to thy eyebrows." Anyway, the glassware remained innocent of the brown-black sheen that, according to the compound of alchemy, would indicate arsenic in the sample. She'd tried every type of food and drink she could find in the palace pantries and pressed into service every bottle and jar she could discover in the watchhouse. She tried one more time with what said on the packet it was sample 2. Looked like a smear of cheese. Cheese? The various fumes thronging around her head were making her slow. She must have taken some cheese samples. She was pretty sure sample 17 had been some Lancre blue vein, which had reacted vigorously with the acid, blown a small hole in the ceiling, and covered half the workbench with a dark green.